Boker Tov, welcome back to another ongoing series of Shiurim on Daf Yomi. We are now in Ketubot Daf Tzadi Aleph Amud Aleph, at the second Mishnah in the 10th Perek, and picking up on the scenario described in the first Mishnah, in which a man had two wives, although the scenario played with in the second half of the first Mishnah, which led to our discussion of Ketubat Panim Dichrin, and whether it exists if one of the wives outlives the husband. Here we have the, shall we say, the typical case that involves Ketubat Panim Dichrin, which is as follows. Mishaya Nasui Shtei Nashim Umeitu. So a man was married to two wives. They both predeceased him, which means, of course, based on Ketubat Panim Dichrin, that each one of their respective sets of children will be the ones to inherit that particular property, that particular amount, and the rest is then divided. V'charkach Meitu, then he dies. And each set of the heirs wants to get their portion based on what their mother's ketubah is. And now let's take a minute and think about this. Really, there's only going to be one set of heirs that's interested in that, whichever one's mother had the larger ketubah. Because if, for instance, and we'll stick with this example a little bit, one of them had a ketubah of 1,000, the other had a ketubah of 500, then, of course, the group that has the, if the same amount of brothers in the group, The group that had the ketubah of 1,000 will be far more interested in dividing it based on that. The group that had 500 would rather divide equally. So let's see what happens. Ein sham ela shtei ketubot. Let's say the estate totals 1,500 or less. Cholkim shaveh. Then they divide equally, meaning that we go to regular nachalat d'oraita. All the brothers are equal. We're not discussing the issue b'chor here. Hayasham motar dinar. However, if there was a surplus of a dinar, which is a relatively small amount, over and above the value of the two ketubot, then we effectuate ketubat panim dichrin. This group gets 1,000, divides them up as many brothers as they are. This group gets 500, and they divide it in as many brothers as they are. And the rest, which may be a small amount, is divided equally. Now, imam riyatomim anachru malim al nechse avin yafed dinar. Let's say that one group of the yatomim, and typically it would be the group that had the larger ketubah in their mother's name, says, we're willing to accept an appreciated estimate of the value of father's property, so that instead of the property which is properly estimated at 1,500, we're going to call it 1,550. The result of that will be, of course, that we will then get the 1,000, or the other guys will get 500, and then the 50 will split. What happens? Kadeshit luk tubatiman, ein shomin lahen, we do not attend to this. Ella shamintan chasim beveitin. Rather, we use an official, objective, standardized estimate, whatever that value is. If it equals or is less than the value of the ketubot, we invoke ketubah yerusha d'oraita. Otherwise, we do banim dichrin. Now, hayushon hasham nachasim baraui. Let's say that there was no surplus, but there was an inheritance that was due to fall. So, for instance, let's say that the two mothers died, then father died, but father's father was still alive. And subsequent to that, father's father died, which means that at the point that father died, there was only 1,500 in the estate. But subsequently, when his father died, there was another $1,000,000 that came down, and would certainly provide a motar dinar. It doesn't help. Einan kivimuchzak. That you have to have property that at the point of death of the bequeather, in this case the father, there has to be a motar dinar in order for us to kick in Ketubat Panim Dichrin. Now, Rav Shimon adds one thing. We already saw this earlier in the Gemara, quoted, Rav Shimon Omer, Afili Yesham Nachasin She'en La Machrayut. Even if there is Motar Dinar, but it's Metaltalin, Einan Klum Achi Yesham Nachasin She'en La Machrayut, Yoter Ashtei Ketubot Dinar. We do not activate Ketubat Panim Dichrin until there is the value in a land of the two Ketubot plus a Dinar. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan. So parenthetically, the Gemara gives the example from a Braita that I was using. This is where I got it from. Uzu elef uzu chamesh miot. If one wife's ketubah was 1,000, the other was 500. Im yesha motar dinar. If there's a surplus, meaning the estate is more than 1,500 and a dinar. Elun ling ketubat iman ve'elun ling ketubat iman. Then they split 1,000 and 500 and the rest is split equally. Vim lav chalku b'shava. If not, then the 1,500 or less is divided equally among them, ignoring the value of their mother's ketubah. Now, pshita, we know that we take it as a given that merubin v'nit ma'atu. Let's say that when father died, the estate was valued at 2,000, and by the time they came to divide it, it had depreciated and it was now worth 1,500. We say Kfar Zachu Bahin Yorshin. The ones with the greater ktuba already had a claim to their part, and therefore we cannot turn around and say, well, now there's no motar dinar, so we're going to divide equally. The question is, Muatin v'nitrabu. What happens if at the point of death, the value of the property was 1500 in the case that we're using? But by the time they came to divide it and discuss the division, it had appreciated to the point of, let's say, 2000. My. So what is the halakha? Do we say at this point that that since now we're coming divided, there's enough to do banim dichrin and still have Yerusha? We do that? Or do we say that because at the point of death, there was not enough to kick in banim dichrin, banim dichrin is now permanently off the table? So we have a story. Denichse devei bar tsartsur, a particular estate. Muatin min trabuhavu. They were exactly that circumstance. They had been a small amount. There were 50, the amount of the ktubot. And then by the time they came to divide it, they had appreciated to the point where there was now a surplus dinar. Vatu the kamed rav amram. And the heirs of the smaller ktuba who were interested in keeping it where it was originally at Muat, came to Rav Amram, Amarlahu Zilu Paisinhu. He said, you better go make nice and appease the fellows who have the larger ktubah, because really, since now the estate is worth more, really we should effectively kick in Banim Dichrin, and if you want to divide equally, you're going to have to get them to agree to it. Lo ashgachu, they didn't pay attention. Amar lahu ilo mefaisitu lahu, if you don't appease them, machina lahu besilva de lo mabadama, I'm going to hit you or strike you with a thorn, a needle that does not draw blood. It's an allusion to cherem. In other words, a wound that can't be seen, I'm going to excommunicate you. So amar lahen, so shadrinu lekamei to Rav Nachman. So surprisingly enough, he sent them to Rav Nachman. Amar lahen kashem shemrubin venit ma'atu. Zachu ben Yorshin, Rav Nachman disagreed with the Psak, and he said that just like in the case where we have a surplus at the point of death, and they depreciate, so at the point of division, there is no surplus, we still say there's banim dichrin, because the Yorshim got that claim at point of death. Kach muatin tabu zachu ben Yorshin, same thing in the inverse. If at the point of death the value is equal or less than the ktubah, then all the Yorshim get an equal claim, and the ones with a lesser ktubah have a larger slice than we would have had otherwise, and we cannot take that away from them just because of the land appreciated in the meantime. All right. Hahu Gavra. Okay, here's a case. Tavumaskube al-Alfazuze. Well, this case has nothing to do with Ketubah, but there was an attempt to use the principle in our Mishnah and apply it here. There was a fellow who had creditors coming after him for 1,000 zoos. Havalu Treya Padne. He had two big houses. Zavino Chadaba Chameshmiya Bachadaba Chameshmiya. He sold each one of them for 500, and as the Ritva points out, it has to have been to the same buyer, otherwise this whole case doesn't work. So he sold them to the same buyer for 500 each. Ata Balchov Tarfa Lachadaminayu. So now the creditor, who was owed 1,000, came and seized, with a writ of seizure of the Beit Din, seized one of the houses worth 500. Hadar Katari Flidach, he then came to seize the other one. Now, Shakal Alfa Zuze, the buyer took 1,000 zuz in cash. The Ka'azil Gabe, he went to the creditor. Amarle, Ishavilach Alfa Zuze, if the first house that you seize is worth 1,000 to you, Lachayai, then we're fine. You leave this other house alone, and you're fine, you're done. Vilo, and if it's not worth 1,000 to you, because its market value is 500, Shakal Alfa Zuze Vistalik, take this 1,000 and get off both houses. Alright, the buyer was making this demand. Question is, can he do such a thing? Savaram Brachama Lamema. So Rabbi Chama, in analyzing it, thought that perhaps we should apply the rule of our Mishnah. What did we say in our Mishnah? That if the heirs say, of course, these are the heirs of the larger ktubah, keep that in mind, say, we're going to reckon the value of a father's estate at greater than market value. And of course, their plan is that therefore they will be able to get the larger cut because their mother's ktubah is larger. We don't listen to them. So Rambam bar Chama thought should be the same thing here. We do not allow the creditor to accept the house at value greater than market value, and therefore end the debt. Amarle Rava. Rava said to him, Midami, the two cases aren't alike. Hatam itlohu pseda liatme. In the case in our Mishnah, there are the heirs of the smaller ktuba who are losing as a result of this feigned appreciation of the value. Hachamid lepseda, here, who loses? Alfa yoiv, alfa shakil. After all, the lender, the creditor, gave $1,000 in his loan, and he got $1,000 because to him the house is worth $1,000. Who loses here? Actually, nobody really loses, and the question is now who's going to gain? That's our question. Is the buyer going to gain? Because the buyer can now turn around to the seller and say, I just saved you $1,000, $1,000 zuz of debt, and therefore I took care of $1,000 of debt, you owe me $1,000, which means that the buyer gains because he only really lost $500, or does the debtor gain because he only has to pay $500 to the seller, which is what he lost, and in the meantime he paid $500 for $1,000 loan. Now, a tirfa b'chama chatvinan, so that's the discussion now. What the Beit Din has to write a tirfa, which is a writ of achrayut that allows the buyer to go back to the seller and say, some of the land you sold me was seized on a debt that you owed, and now you owe me that money. How much does he write it? Ravina Amar Ba'alfa. He says, you write $1,000. Ravira Amar Ba'chamesh Mi'ar. Ravira said, no, you write $500, because that's indeed what the buyer lost. And that is the halacha, which means, of course, that the seller here gained because his creditor was willing to accept his house at twice the value. Now, another case very similar. Here it's a smaller amount. They were coming after him for 100 zuz. He had two small parcels of land. He sold each one of them for 50. Atabachov, evidently that was the end of his land, just like in the previous case. Atabachov tarfa l'chad minayu. So again, the creditor came and seized, with a proper writ, seized one of the pieces of land. Hadar atav katarif l'idach. He then came to seize the other one. Shako me'azuzi, so the buyer came to him with 100. V'ka'aza l'gabe. V'amarle, he said, ishavilach me'azuzi, if the land that you got is worth 100, the one that you got, which is market value 50, is worth 100 to you, l'chayai, then we're fine. You keep that, get away from this house, and we're done. On this land, and we're done. Velo, and if it's not worth that to you, shkol me'azuzi, take this 100, vistalik, and get off the land. Now, so Rav Yosef, remember, Rav Yosef, again, made the same judgment call that Rami Bar Chama made. He thought it's the same deal as our Mishnah, in which you cannot artificially inflate the value of something, or accept a larger estimate of the value of property. And Amar Le Abaye. Abaye said the same thing that Rava said to Rami Bar Chama. Midami, hatam idlo psid of the atmi, hacham I psid idlo, mayor yoiv, mayor shakil. Same exact thing, just turn the whole thing as 10% of the previous sugya. Now, v'tirfak imacham achatvinan, same discussion. Ravina Amar b'mayor, Ravir Amar b'chamashin, hilchata b'chamashin. So the halacha is that the tirfa is written for 50 because that is indeed what the buyer lost, and we're not concerned with what the seller gain. So indeed, the seller comes out on top if his creditor is willing to accept the land at an appreciated value. Okay, Hahu Gavra Havu Damaski Be Me'azuzi. All right, this is another case, but it's not a repeat. There was a fellow who had creditors coming after him for 100 zuz. Shachiv, he died. Shava Katina Da'ara, Davishav Yechamishin Zuzi. He left a small parcel of land that was worth 50. Atabachov Katariflay. So the creditor came and seized the land. That's fine. Karka is mishtabed l'chov. Now, azil yatmi yavu lechamshin zuzi. So the heirs came and paid him 50, ostensibly to get him to get off their land, and the land was worth 50. But remember, he had only seized 50, but the debt was for 100. Hadakatai flew, so he accepted the money. Then he came back to collect to take the land for the other 50. In other words, his claim was, the first 50 you paid me was to start paying off your father's debt. A very nice thing. In the meantime, you didn't fully pay it off. I'm coming to seize the land for the other half of the debt. Atula kame da Abaye. So they all came to Abaye for judgment. Amar Lahani said, Mitzvah tomni for achov avien. Even though the Baal Chov cannot make a claim against the heirs that they must pay their father's debt, it's a mitzvah for it to pay off your father's debt. which means hani kamoi mitzvah ditu. So the first 50 that you paid, you were doing a mitzvah, paying off your father's debt. Hashta kitarf bedin katarf. Now he's coming to seize properly 50 for the other 50 that he was owed. V'lo amran. This only works d'lo amrule hani chamshin zuzi d'mei adaraktina. This only works if the heirs do not come to him and say this 50 is for the parcel of land. And it's if they just gave him 50, so he can argue that 50 was a partial payment on father's debt. But if they gave him 50 and said this 50 is for that land, then they've really gotten him off the land, because effectively they've said that the land that you seized, which was proper, we're now redeeming, as it were, with the 50, and you have no more claim because there's nothing else that you could seize. That was evidently all of the real estate assets that the fellow had. Now, Hahu Gavra, another case. He sold interest in his mother's ktubah. Now, everybody's alive. Father's alive, mother's alive, this guy's obviously alive. And he sold interest in his mother's ktubah, for a small amount, because it would all depend on the following. The mother would have to predecease father, and then this fellow would have to outlive his father, which is, of course, a more likely scenario, but it's also a question mark. In order for this other fellow to be able to collect it all. So he sold it for a relatively small amount. Now, he also sold it, if mother comes and protests, then I'm not taking any responsibility for it. Means if mother comes and protests and her protest is accepted so that, the deal is off, because after all, what I sold you basically was something that doesn't yet exist. I don't have these rights yet. These are all based on future interest. If mother comes and protests, I don't owe you anything, which means you lose not only your interest in the ktubah, but you also lose the small amount of money that you paid me for it. And the fellow accepted the deal. Shechiva ima velo irara. So the mother died without protesting. Va'ata iuva kama'ara. Then the guy who sold it came and protested, as it were, in his mother's voice. Savram Rachama Lamemar. So Rachama thought, you Malkam Imekai. This poor fellow is taking his mother's place. Just like the mother could protest, he could protest. So Amalei Rava. Rava said, not so. Nehi de Achrayuti Dalo Kabil Alei. After all, what did he not accept when he sold the interest in the Ktubah? He did not accept Achrayut over his mother's protest. In other words, if an outside party, in this case the mother, comes and protests and is successful in getting this back from you, I don't take responsibility, you have no recourse to me. But he certainly accepted responsibility over himself. If he comes and reneges on the deal, he certainly has to pay back the money that the fellow owed, and that, of course, the way it plays out. Now, I'm Rav Chama, going to see a similar case. Reuven shemachar sadeh l'shimon shelo b'achrayut. A sold B a field without achrayut, which means, of course, if a creditor of A comes and sees the field from B, B has no recourse. He gives up the field, yet he loses the money. B sold it back to A, and he sold it with achrayut. Which means if a creditor of B comes and seizes the field from A gives the field and comes back to B and gets money. Now, just to make things a lot more fun, and this is, of course, why this is here, and now a creditor of A came and seized the field from A, which theoretically should be just, I owe you money, here's my field, but remember what happened. A had bought the field from B with achrayut, and B had bought the field from A without achrayut. Dinahu, Rabbi Bar Chama said, according to the law, to azel shimon maftzile, B should have to pay A back, which of course sounds preposterous, that A borrowed money from somebody, then he sold one of his fields to B without achrayut, B sold it back to A with achrayut, and now when A comes to claim his field, when the creditor comes to claim his field from A, B has to pay him back for it. Very strange. Amar le Rava. So Rava doesn't like it. He says, Nehi da achrayut da ama kabil alei. Let's take a look at it. When B sold the field back to A, he sold it with achrayut. What does achrayut mean? It means I'm taking responsibility that if an outside party legitimately comes and seizes the field, I will make reparations to you. Now, that's true about achrayut da alma, meaning if an outside person, somebody who's coming because of me, and says that my field is attached to a loan, and they're going to come and take it from you, then I have to pay you. But I never accepted. B will say, I never accepted responsibility for your creditors coming. All right, and that is fine, except for Moda Rava. Rava will agree, will exceed one point. Reuven shiara sadeh miYaakov. If A inherited a field from his father, umachra leShimon. What's confusing about Reuven and Shimon here is they're not brothers in this scenario. A inherited a field from his father and sold it to B. Shelo b'achriyut, without achriyut. Umvata Shimon umachra leReuven achriyut. Again, same scene that B sold it back to A with achriyut. Umvata b'achov de Yaakov, and now the father's creditor came. V'katar flei min A, and he comes and seizes the field from A. Because in this case, B really does have to pay A off. Why? Because my time of Balchov Diakov Kabalchov Dalmadami. Father's creditor is like some outside creditor. The only time that it would not be the case is if A's own creditor came and seized the field, then B never took responsibility towards A to say, if your own creditor seizes the field from you, I'm going to pay you back for the loss of the field. But if some outside creditor, whether it's my creditor or creditor of something that happened before you got the field, comes and seizes it, then I am responsible. Okay, Amram Bar Chama, next ruling. Reuven shemachar sadeh leShimon b'achrayut v'zakaf alav b'milveh. So A sells a field to B, and now B doesn't have the money to pay, so A turns around and says, okay, the $1 million to the field, we'll turn it into a loan, and we write it as a shtar chov, that you owe me $1 million, as if I lent you money. So we're almost playing a virtual debt game where A sells B the field. B pays a virtual $1 million. A then lends the virtual $1 million back to B. Of course, no money changed hands. And so now the real $1 million is owed from B to A as a regular loan. That will make a world of difference here, as we'll see in a moment. Umet Reuven, and then A died. V'ata b'chov de Reuven, and in the meantime, A had a creditor. Let's say for $1 million also. V'katar flami Shimon. So the creditor came, and he seized the field from B. It was his field that he had a claim on. Seized the field from B. Opaise bezuze. B liked the field. So B went up to the creditor and said, here, you take $1 million in cash, get off the field. Now, of course, B wants to come back to the heirs and say, I just paid off your debt. I want you to pay me $1 million. Of course, the heirs on the other end could turn around and say, yes, but you also owe us $1 million. So let's see if we have a wash here or if somebody's going to come out on the short end of the stick. Dina hu da'amrile b'nei Reuven. So Rabbi Bachama said that from the technical legal perspective, the heirs could turn around to B and say, Ana metatali shavak avun gabach. Our father didn't give you land. Our father had money that he had given you. In other words, he had lent you money. Remember, that's metaltalin. And metaltalin of heirs are not attached to a loan. Only land is. Which means that what you gave him a gift of $1 million. He's happy. He got his debt, but you didn't cover us at all. It wasn't anything he could have seized from us. In other words, had we had that money, he couldn't have seized it from us. So you're paying him off with that didn't help. Which means that he still owes the estate $1 million, and he doesn't have any recourse for the $1 million that he paid off. Now, Amarava, Ipikeach Idach, but if B is smart, and by the way, this can be after the fact, he didn't have to think of this in advance, what'll happen? Magbilahu Nialayu Ara. Here's what he'll do. He will, when the heirs finally come to him and say, okay, in the meantime, you owe us $1 million, he'll pay them back with land, not cash. And then he'll turn around and seize the land back. Why? Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman Ravua. Rav Nachman's ruling. Yitomim shegavu karka b'chovat avien. Heirs that seize land because of a debt owed their father. B'chov chozer v'gove otamehen. A creditor can come and then seize it from them. In other words, this is the chidush of Rav Nachman's point. Is that normally we associate an attachment to land with land that was owned by the debtor at the time of the debt. Here's something new. If A had a creditor, and the creditor came to seize land, and there is no land in A's estate anymore because it was all sold, he can go and collect it from wherever it is. Let's say in the meantime A was himself also a creditor, and when he died, his heirs can come and seize the land. They seize the land after he dies, which means obviously after the debt incurred to the other guy. They come and seize the land and they bring the land to their property. Now A's creditor can come and seize that land. Same thing here. B, who bought this land, who paid the guy off with money to get off his land, and now the heirs come to him for the $1 million he owes the estate. He gives them land. That land now is seizable by any Baal Chov. He himself is a Baal Chov because he paid off their debt. So he can come and seize the land back, and everything again ends up as equal. Nobody here gains or profits off anybody else. We all end up in the same place. Good. Okay, now, next case, Amarabah, the next ruling. Reuven Shemachar calls Sedotav L'Shimon. If A sold all of his fields to Shimon, to B. A sold all of his fields to B. Chazar Shimon Amachar Sadachat L'Levi. And B sold one field to Levi. Now, just one preface here. As the Mishnah in Gittin, in the fifth parak, presents to us in the first Mishnah in the fifth parak, the collection of different debts happens on a different scale, meaning that a debt can always be paid off with cash or with any metaltalin. But if there is no cash, or if you have to come after somebody for payment, then and you're going after land, then nezikin, payment for damages and torts, comes from idit, from the finest kind of land. Ketubah, on the other hand, comes from Ziburit, the poorest kind of land. And a Baal Chov, a creditor, collects from Beinonit, the middle kind of land. Now, how do we judge best, middle, and worst? Is it on a relative scale to the person's own holdings? Is there some international scale? Is there some national scale? That's a sugya in the middle of the first parak of Bava Kamma. We won't deal with it here. Suffice it to say that the rule is a Baal Chov collects Beinonit. Okay, now, back to our case. A sold all of his property to B. B sold one parcel of land to C. Va'ata Baal Chov de Reuven, and now a creditor of A came, Ratzami Zegova, he can collect either from B or from C. Is that really true? Let's think about it. V'lomran ela dezavna Beinonit, that will only work if C bought Beinonit. Aval Zavna Idit v'Ziburit, let's say that he specifically bought land that was not Beinonit. He bought Idit, he bought Ziburit, he bought both Idit and Ziburit. Matzia Marle, he could turn to the creditor and say, that's why I went out of my way to buy non-Beinonit land, so you wouldn't come and seize it from me. I knew that A had creditors out there, or I thought he might, so I made sure to buy land from B, that was from A's original estate, that could not be seized. Uveinonit nami, even if C bought Beinonit, it's only going to be true if he didn't leave the same kind of Beinonit, in B's estate. In other words, it can only work if A sold some Edith and Beinonit or Ziburit and Beinonit, and then C bought all the Beinonit. Aval Shavak Beinonit Techavata, but if he left some Beinonit in B's hands, Matzia Marley could say, Nachtel Chamakom Likvotimenu, I left some Beinonit for you to collect from B. I am less proximate, I am less immediate to your original debtor, and therefore you got to go to B. The only way you can ever come to C is if C has the only Beinonit in the package. And even then, you could go to C, or you could go to B and say, you know what, I'll take Ziburit, because I'd rather deal with B. Now, Amar Baye, next case. Reuven Shemachar Sadel Shimon Bachrayut. So again, Reuven sold, A sold the field to B with Achrayut. Vata Bachov de Reuven Katar Flamine. Classic case, A has a creditor, seizes the field from B. Dinahu de'azil Reuven Umafzilei. A has the right to come up to the creditor and say, here, I'm going to pay you the money, leave the field alone. In other words, the creditor can't say, A, you're out of the picture. You sold the field, I'm going after B. You're not part of the deal. You're not my litigant. And the creditor cannot say to A, you're not my baldvarim. Why? Because A can say back to him, the mafkat minei alai hadar. You seize it from B, B's going to come back to me. So I'm very much of an interested party in here, and I don't want to have to deal with all of this stuff. Take the money and leave everybody alone. V'ikadamri, some people even take it a step further. Afilu shelo b'achrayut nami. Even if A sold his fields to B without achrayut, which means that if the creditor seizes it from B, B has no recourse to A. A is still an interested party. Tamar le, lo nechali d'havle l'shimo tarum utalai. I don't want B to be angry at me. I want to be a nice neighbor to B. And if somebody seizes the field from the fellow I sold it to, I want to pay the debt off. So I am an interested party. You can't push me away and say, I have nothing to say to you. All right. Amar Abaye, last case. Reuven Shemachar Sadel Shimon Shelo Ba'achrayut. If A sold the field to B with no achrayut, V'yatsu alav asikin. And now, suddenly, there are rumors circulating and people threatening a challenge to say that A never owned the field. A, they're claiming A never owned the field, it wasn't his to sell. Which means, of course, if that's the case, that B is out of luck, because he just spent money on a field that's not his. But he didn't yet spend the money. He didn't yet pay the money. Achilu achzikba, if B did not yet take hold of the field, yachol achzorbo. He could turn around and say, you know what, I heard rumors about this field, I don't want to do with it. Deals off. Mishachzikba, but if he already took some ownership, then, and we'll see what that is in a minute, eino yachol achzorbo. He can't renege. Mishum da marle, because the seller, A, will say to him, chayte de kitri sabr v'kibot. You bought yourself a bag of knots, and you knew about it, and you bought it, and you knew that there was trouble here, and you have to continue with the deal. By the way, just because there's a challenge doesn't mean it's going to be successful. But you should know there's going to be some litigation, there's going to be some energy spent in proving your case, etc. Now, me'emat machzik pohuba, so when, at what point do we consider that B has taken hold of the field so that he can no longer renege on the deal? Michidaya shameitzra, from the point that he starts plowing on the borders of the field. Okay? Ika damri, by the way, some people say, afilu ba'achrayut nami. Even if A sold B the field with achrayut, he can still force him to go through with the deal, even though there's a challenge. He said, look, a guy's making a challenge. If the guy's challenge is successful and they seize the field from you, you show me that and I'll pay you. But in the meantime, just because you're going to have to expend some energy and time in the Beit Din proving that this field's yours, doesn't mean that you can renege on the deal. And so therefore, the deal stays. Okay, Im Yirtzeh Hashem, we will in the next podcast pick up at this point at the Mishnah on Daf Tzadi Gimel Amud Aleph and continue with our study of the 10th Parak of Masechet Ketubot. Everybody should have a wonderful day.